Okay?
What was your second?
Do I? Okay. All right, now, let me continue on. The Hashmal is going to relate to the building of the temple. It's going to relate to some of the greatest arguments in Judaism alone. I mean, the question on the temple of whether it is a continuing command for each generation to build the temple, or was it a command just for a certain generation?
Can you redefine quickly Hashmal?
Well, Hashmal, we're going to be weeks defining. Okay? But we can say this, it is insufficient to say it's amber. Okay? Let me read the next sentence here. The word Hashmal is virtually untranslatable, even though most English translations render it as electrum, meaning amber, and a modern Hebrew is used for the word for electricity.
Really? Hashmal?
Now, the Hashmal is a spiritual force. Tom?
Back to a question that I wanted to ask at the very beginning, but I was afraid to. But,
in here?
But this word is capitalized. You wouldn't just capitalize a color.
That's right. That's because the Hashmal actually represents a spiritual force.
Where is it capitalized?
Which is the word Hashmal.
In the Hebrew?
Yes. Well, no, I mean, but in the translations, in Hebrew translations of the Bible, they capitalize Hashmal. It is a spiritual force which is involved in the element of providence that protect from evil.
Would that have to be the Spirit of God from the standpoint that a strict definition is that God is all holy?
It would apply to that.
How would it apply to the Shekinah?
Well, but I mean, you're going to have an overlapping of terms over and over. Okay, let me continue on. Here, write this down. The Hashmal thus stands as a barrier between good and evil. Now, the final thing that the prophet saw were four hayot. The hayot means literally living creatures. And they will come up a little bit later.
Joe, is it because these guys are just that smart that they could tell to capitalize just because in Hebrew it's not capitalized?
That's correct. But the Hashmal, what they were able to determine is that the Hashmal was not just a color. It was something that...
Something more than that.
That's right. That's right. Okay? Now, we've got to go back to God's garment.
Let me ask you something, Joe. In the Olam Haba, is evil existing?
It will... evil will exist. It just is not active.
Okay. I mean, by definition, if you define what correctness is, what goodness is, then you have indirectly defined what evil is.
Okay. Evil was there before Adam sinned. It was there. But Adam was immune to it.
Right. Well, the fact that anything
until he sinned
existed created the opposite.
That's right. Okay, I told you all this was going to get heavy. Okay, we got to go back to God's garment. The function of clothing with respect to men, in its most abstract sense, you wear it because you are ashamed. Okay? It is a barrier also against passion. If the sexual passions were left unchecked, it will lead to evil and away from God. Okay, the second thing that you have, you wear clothes to protect you from a hostile environment. You wear it to protect you from the cold. You wear it to protect you from the rain, from the sun. In a spiritual sense, you have an environment that is hostile to godliness, and that would be defined as evil. So therefore, God's garment is the element of His providence that protects against evil. Write that down. God's garment is the element of His providence that protects against evil. Therefore, God's garment is called the Hashmal.
Now, where are you quoting this from?
I'm reading directly from Ari Kaplan's book Talit. This would mean, however, that God's garment is identical to the Hashmal that we discussed earlier. That's the sentence. Both of these are the elements that protect from evil. From the ancient times, the sages identified the Hashmal with God's garment. Okay, you know what gematria is. The numerical value of gematria, numerical value or the gematria of Hashmal is the same as for another word, Malbush. Should be your next word on your...
Hashmal Malbush is the same gematria.
Yes, I didn't put Malbush on. Yeah, I did. Okay. And we'll come back to that in a little bit. On the Hashmal and the Malbush. We'll work out the gematria on it. Okay. Malbush is also Hebrew word for garment. When Nahash, the serpent in the garden, tempted Eve, he said, "You shall become like God, that you shall know not only good, but you shall know evil." The serpent argued that God was the creator of evil. If Eve were to eat of the tree of knowledge, she too would know good and evil, and therefore she would more resemble God. So the serpent, according to the Midrash, contended that in doing this, Eve would fulfill God's purpose in creation, since she would be imitating Him. There's a problem with the argument, specifically that God had commanded them not to eat of the tree of knowledge. You do not fulfill God's purpose by going against His expressed word.
That little statement means a whole lot.
That's right. Okay. Now, please note this. What God actually wanted was that man resemble God in overcoming evil, and not that he should succumb to it, and not that he should need to be protected against it. In the Torah, you have 613 commandments, you have 248 do's and 365 don'ts. The do's are called positive commandments. The don'ts are negative commandments. Why is it necessary to have so many laws? Isn't it enough for people to just have a general idea of what's right, what's wrong, then adhere to it? There are people that feel that we should do away with laws. How about this? People say that it's necessary that people be good and love one another. You know, Gandhi made this statement. If you ever heard of Gandhi's most famous statement, at least this is, he said, "I would have become a Christian, except I met one once." Okay? No, it's not. But the truth is that people have this thing, well, what God commands us is just love one another. And that's it. You could ask a question, why did God give so many laws in the Torah? Well, the answer is that there's evil in the world. If people were perfect, we would need few, if any, laws. People would live in total peace with one another without any rules or regulations. Animals do. They get along fine in harmony with others of their species. They don't have anything resembling a formal law. The same was true of Adam before he sinned. And that's the goal that we're going towards. He was innocent of evil. He didn't need any of the rules or the laws. All that he needed to obey was the one rule, to not eat of the tree of knowledge. He had free will. He was enabled to achieve perfection and a closeness to God. It was only after man sinned that we needed 613 laws. Therefore, the commandments are what God has put to safeguard us from evil. They restrict us so that one neighbor doesn't harm another neighbor. They remind us constantly of our obligation to God. They protect us from being swallowed up by evil. You could say that they are the barrier that God has placed in our lives against the forces of evil. There's a Midrash that says, "I have created the evil urge, the Yetzer Hara, but I have created the Torah as a remedy for it."
So the Talit is the literal commandments that we put on to remind us.
Exactly. Let me give you a definition. God's Talit is therefore the sum total of all the commandments in the Torah. The sages had a saying, "He who keeps the commandments grabs the divine presence." This is the meaning of tzitzit. Now I want you to think over the week of the woman that had the issue of blood for 12 years. Grab the tzitzit.
Joe?
Yes?
The healing in the wings of Zechariah, that is the same thing.
No, it's in Malachi.
Why Malachi?
Chapter 4, verse 2. The Son of Righteousness shall arise with healing in his kanaf, in his wings.
So when Rashul said that for him to imitate Yeshua is our example, it was the, you could almost parallel it with the resembling.
Exactly. Yeshua is the visible image of the invisible God. Okay? It's not to parallel him in his looks, is to parallel him in his actions. Okay? Yes, Billy?
Would any of these correspond to Elijah's mantle?
Exactly. They will correspond to Elijah's mantle. My hopes are that as we get to the end of this, that all types of things will start corresponding. Okay, the Talit is alluded to in the verse, "He covers himself with light as a garment." The light in the passage is the Torah and its commandments. In fact, in Proverbs chapter 6, verse 23, it says, "A commandment is a lamp, and the Torah is light." Okay, the main element that we have in God's plan as a barrier against evil is the commandments, the Torah. There's one problem with the commandments. The problem with the commandments is man. Because if man does not observe the commandments, he's the weak link. There is no barrier against the evil. Now, what do you have that you're told concerning the false Messiah? He's called the lawless one. You would say he's the man without Torah. Literally, the man without Torah. What we are to see is that we are to wear God's talit as individuals and as a body, as a corporate body. The only reason we wear the talit is what? To hold the tzitzit. And the purpose of the tzitzit is what? To remind us of the commandments so that we might be holy. Okay, without the tzitzit, the talit is a square piece of cloth. It's nothing more. When you talk about God's talit, unless fulfilled by man, the commandments do not serve their purpose. Okay.
Being worn by a conservative and some Orthodox only during prayer time?
Yes, you only wear it during morning service.
Okay.
Morning prayers.
And then over a period of years, it changed to...
That's correct.
...during religious festivities.
Right, but that's considering that you're wearing the talit katan.
Okay. So the Orthodox almost always will wear the katan.
Yes, the... Orthodox will always be wearing the talit katan. Okay, man is the goal of God's creation. And the spiritual worlds exist only for His sake. All the spiritual worlds exist only for His sake. There are essentially four levels in the spiritual plane. You need to write this down. There are four levels in the spiritual plane. They are alluded to by the four letters in God's name. The Yod, the Hey, the Vav, and the Hey. The four corners of the Talit allude to the four levels.
Is this where the four levels of interpretation came from as well? The same thought?
I'm not sure. I'm really not. Okay. In Ezekiel's vision, he saw the Hashmal, which was God's garment. He saw the four angels called the Hayut. If the Hashmal is the Talit of God, the Hashmal, the Mabush, the garment of God, what are the four Hayut? The Zitzit.
On the four.
Okay. The four Hayot are the four Tzitzit or the corners of God's Talit. This is the reason that Ezekiel saw the Hayot attached to the Hashmal.
Is that what it's talking about when it starts... makes a reference to the four creatures with the four faces, the four strings in each tzitzit?
That's right. That's right. And the strings of the tzitzit are also going to relate to the strings of the veils. And the veils, you had the kerevim, you had the chayot put upon them. Okay. Now, write this down. The Hashmal exists primarily for the Hayot. Just as the Talit exists primarily for the Tzitzit.
But then the Hayot would be illustration for us in the spiritual plane, or our protection from evil. Is that, or an illustration to the part, or old?
Now say that again.
The Hayot, if they illustrate God's Tzitzit, then they, on in the spiritual plane, they are for us. When we see them, we are, it's to remind us to depart from evil and also our protection from evil.
Yes. Yes, definitely.
Could that lead into Moshe and Eliyahu of the Old and New Covenant?
Yes. I mean, I have an idea that you could just about go anywhere in the Bible and it's going to relate. Okay? Okay. We already mentioned that the Tzitzit have five knots, right? Which represent, for one thing, the five books of the Torah and also the first five words of the Shema. They begin with the knots. Likewise, the first step in bringing the commandments within your reach is the Torah. If you don't have the Torah, you don't have the commandments. So the Torah is at least the foundation.
I just worked in Gematria for Torah, and it's 611 for Torah.
For the word Torah? Okay, now, you have the knots by the Tzitzit to the Talit. Just as the Torah and its commandments bind man to God.
Would you mind repeating that?
Okay, the knots bind the Tzitzit to the Talit. Just as the Torah and the commandments bind man to God.
Well, okay. I know we've got to go fast, but how then can Torah be enmity to God? I mean, for us. In the book of Romans, Shaul, I believe, that's what he was talking about.
He wasn't talking about the Torah.
He was talking about the commandments, or in which I encompass in Torah. He says it's enmity, and I've never understood that because I don't believe it is. I don't believe it's a separation, that the commandments separate us from God.
But it is by our actions that if we of our free will ignore His commandments, it separates us from God.
Also, the act of not being able to keep the commandments.
That's right. It makes an enmity. The commandments make an enmity between you and God. Because not in themselves. Chapter 6, Romans 6. He says, what then? Should we sin more? God forbid. But he's saying that they point out where that you have separated from God. Okay. The number eight has a special significance. I mean, the Olam Haba is the eighth day, right? Right. You circumcise on the eighth day. You have the 8 days of Hanukkah with Sukkot. You have Sukkot Shemini Atzeret. That's the eighth day. It was on the eighth day that Shlomo sent the people home. So we could go on and on to all the various allusions to eight. Likewise, you have eight strings in the Tzitzit. They indicate the number eight was understood by the sages as being the transcendental, that which is above. Through the commandments, man can achieve a unique relationship with God. The eight strings bind us to God's garment. They indicate that we're bound to something that goes far beyond the realms of the physical world. The only way to achieve the transcendental is through the books of the Torah. Now that means that Remember the Torah. I want to put Romans chapter 10 verse 4 together with this, that the Torah, or the instruction, let me read it to you, is the telos, or the goal. But I'm leaving part of it out. Yeah. For Messiah is the end of the instruction for righteousness to everyone who believes. Okay, so don't put that the Torah gives someone redemption with God. It leads someone to redemption. And the agent of redemption is Messiah. So I don't want to get that out of balance there. But in order to know God, have relationship with God, you have relationship with God, or you grow in your relationship with God with what is revealed in the Torah. Okay, we have the number 13. You have, if you'll remember, we have 13 windings down at the bottom. In Judaism, you have 13 attributes of God. Wait, I said that wrong. There are 13 attributes of God, but you have 13 attributes or rules that our sages use to explain the Torah. 13 different ways to understand the Torah, or to define it, to work in it. Then you have 13 attributes of God's mercy. Let me give these to you. You'll have to copy them fast. I have like 3 minutes to go and quite a ways to go. The first is God. The second is merciful. The third is gracious. The fourth is slow. The fifth to anger. The sixth, abundant in love. The seventh, truth. The eighth, keeping mercy. The ninth, to the thousandth generation. The tenth, forgiving sin. 11th, rebellion and error is number 12, and cleansing is number 13. Those are found for you in Exodus 3:46. You have the 13 attributes appear at the words of the prophet. This is found in Micah chapter 7, verses 18 to 20. Who is a God like you? Number 1. Who pardons sin? Number 2. And overlooks rebellion? Number 3. To the remnant of his heritage? Number 4. He retains not his anger forever? Number 5, for he desires mercy. Number 6, he will again have mercy on us. Number 7, he will subdue our sins. Number 8, and cast all our errors in the depths of the sea. Number 9, you will show truth to Jacob. Number 10, love to Abraham. Number 11, as sworn to our fathers. Number 12, from days of old. Number 13. We have in the tzitzit, you have the 5 knots and the 8 strings, which make a total of 13. You also have the 13 windings in the last session.
Hey, Joe, quickly, on the Exodus logo, it's not 3:6, it's 34:6.
Oh, is it 34:6? Okay. They have it wrong in the book here. Okay.
3:46.
Okay, let me read this to you. These are therefore represented by the tzitzit, which link the abstract talit of God to the concrete problems of man. In this manner, the 13 knots and strings in the tzitzit alluded to the 13 principles used in explaining the commandments. Okay, there's another relationship. These are the 13 special commandments. I have 1 minute. They are, number 1, belief in God. Number 2, fear of God. Number 3, love of God. Number 4, belief in God's unity. Number 5, study of Torah. Number 6, wearing tefillin. Number 7, wearing tzitzit. Number 8, affixing the mezuzah. Number 9, circumcision. Number 10, Sabbath observance. Number 11, prayer. Number 12, festival observance. And number 13, the Shema. Okay, these 13 commandments serve as a particular bond between man and God. Of course, all the other commandments also bind man to God, but they do so in a more general way. So you have 600 other commandments. You have 100 commandments for each day of creation. Those are the general commandments, 13 specific commandments that bind man to God. So, you have in the Tzitzit, the gematria of Tzitzit is going to be 600, and then you have the 13 strings and knots, making a total of 613, so that when you see the Tzitzit, you think of all of God's commandments. Next week, what we'll go into is the Tekelet and the gematria of some of these words, and apply them back to the book of Yehezkel.